Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. On our way to the show, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it is a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and you get something back in the end. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can just log on to steinershow.org, and when you get there, click on MeQ's banner, and all the information will be right there. This is another one of our Urbanite radio stories, conversations this hour. This issue of the Urbanite, they named people as changemakers in our community and talked about what it means to be a changemaker. Often people who are changemakers sacrifice a great deal because they put what they believe in before them and their families. Oftentimes, and or not, let me say for them, but at least they get so into what they're trying to do to help this community that other things take less precedence. And so three of those men, three all men this time, are with us this hour. Once again, Dr. Lester Spence, of course, author of the book Stare in the Darkness, The Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics, and assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. And Gardner Carter, who has been on the show before as well. He's outreach supervisor for Safe Streets here.
Director
of Safe Streets. I'm sorry, I had the wrong title on here, but now you're director of Safe Streets here in Baltimore, a program of people who are ex-felons working in our community to stem violence. And John Long, who's founder and president of Clean Bread and Cheese Creek from Dundalk, moved back into his grandfather's house. A number of events led him to the back to the creek that he grew up in as a child and found horrible condition was in environmentally and went to, and did something about it. So, gentlemen, welcome. Join us, and good to have you all in the studio.
Thank you.
And since people can't see me, I need folks to come across the glass here and get the screen working because it's not working. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join in our conversation, and look forward to that. So, you know, one of the things that was said in this piece by Jan Hubolt, who is an old friend of mine who runs the GBC leadership program, about what it means to be a change agent, how difficult it is when you decide to take a path. You know, and one of the things you were saying, Lester, and I think you've said it before on the show, and really kind of fits this piece of the story, is that you decided to be a public intellectual, an activist professor, somebody who just doesn't always fit the norm of the tweedy jacket in the office.
Yeah.
And that comes with a price.
It really, really, really does. And so you guys joked when I walked in the office, like, you look pretty tired. I'm like, all these different hats that we have to wear, they take a tremendous toll. And the thing is, we're doing it in, this is one of those cases where literally public action, you don't really get any type of feedback. You definitely don't get paid. And the deep thing is, when you think about it, the change that you desire to see either might not come or you might not actually be around to see it, right? So for me, it's you know, talking to these brothers, and actually you fit that yourself. Mm. It's just really, the interesting question is what is it that drives these people to do what they do, given that they really don't get paid, they don't get any types of benefits we'd associate with the labor they perform.
And Gardner, it's always good to see you, brother. It's always good to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
And I know you're a director now. I should have said that, and I'm glad you are the director. And you had huge shoes to fill. The late Leon Farouk, who's just an amazing human being, who passed away much too quick. But yours was also a leap. I mean, given the time you did in prison, 20 years?
Yeah, just about.
Just about 20 years? Mm-hmm. And the decisions you made. I mean, people can make all kinds of decisions in prison. Mm-hmm. You chose to make a certain decision. And even you coming out, you could have done many other things. But you sacrificed what could have been a lot more money and many other things to do what you chose to do here.
Yeah. Well, I think it all started while I was in prison. Actually, with my spirituality, being Muslim, watching the impact and effect that I had on a lot of the young men that were in prison, and everybody saying to me that you had this kind of influence, and coming home, seeing the impact that I also had with my family who was with me throughout my incarceration, but more so a lot of the guys that I seen in my neighborhood, talking to them, young men and women that I didn't know, but just talking to them because I didn't want some particular things around my neighborhood or around my great nieces and grandchildren. So I just reached out to them. And one of the things that I've learned from my own experience and my life is that every human being has a capacity to change. You know, violence is an ignorant man's weapon. You know what I mean? So I know that through education, through individuals being involved in people's lives, showing them love, showing them that they care, then what happens is this change takes place in any individual that you involve yourself with. Being a part of Safe Streets, the program's whole mission is to change the thinking of individuals, which will result in the behavior being changed. That is the thing that has always been a part of my life, being involved in something that's actually a constant change. It's a constant change. When I got involved in SLAM, it changed my thinking.
Was in prison.
Yes, in prison. And as I'm going through this process of change, people are actually witnessing it. And, you know, I can see how they interact with me, not as the old individual I was, but as the person that's making the change and encouraging that. You know what I mean? So that kept me on my path to change.
And I'm interested in John Long, who I've never met until this moment, who grew up in Dundalk and moved back into his grandfather's house, and something happened. Tell us what happened.
Well, just to touch back on what you said in the beginning about the my wife always makes a joke. She goes, I'm not a sports widow. She goes, I'm an environmental widow. Because come spring and come fall, I'm always cleaning up somewhere or helping someone start their own cleanup. So basically, you know, it was one of these things, you know, they always say that no matter what you call God, God sometimes puts you in the right direction,
right,
even if you're not pointed that way. I had a tornado hit the back of my house shortly after I moved back into my grandparents' house, and it tore off the rear of the house.
In Dundalk.
Right. Threw debris everywhere. And, of course, the insurance company contacted me and the National Weather Service, and they said, don't touch anything because we need to confirm that this was actually what it was. It would see the debris patterns and everything else. So shortly after that, I mean, about a day, and the MDE showed up, and they said, you know, we have a report that your neighbor says you're remodeling and throwing the debris in the creek. Now, I don't know of anybody that, like, rips the rear off of their house off, but first of all, I was angry, right. And then when they allowed me, when the insurance company, and they did, you know, National Weather Service said it was an F1 tornado that came through, when they said you could clean up your stuff, I went in and started with the intention of taking my shingles out and my siding, and when I got down in there, I was just appalled, because my bank is elevated a little bit above the creek. So, I mean, you see stuff. But when you're down in there, because it's covered by dirt and debris, you don't even realize how disgusting it is. I mean, we've pulled out hundreds of shopping carts, literally hundreds, 192 to be exact, from this little 4.5-mile-long stream.
192 shopping carts on a 4.5-mile stream.
Exactly. We've found motorcycles. We've found enough car parts to build a car, you know, hundreds of tires. And every time we think that we can't be shocked enough, you know, we find something else. So I started this cleanup with just a group of friends, and we quickly figured out there was no way that a group of friends could do this because the problem was so monumentous. So we had our first official cleanup in September of 2009, where it was public cleanup. And we had 56 volunteers showed up. And I'm like, you know what? We're going to keep doing this. We're going to make this stream clean. So our last cleanup was last year, September 24th, and now we had 153 people show up. Mm-hmm. And I hope we keep growing. And it's funny because when I first started the cleanups, people made fun of me, and they said, this is Dundalk. You're not going to get anybody to care about the environment. You know, everyone's like, oh, the town is dirty. It's like, well, you know what? It's only dirty because nobody thinks anyone cares. But you know what? There's a heck of a lot of people who care.
One of the things I made me think of when you said that, and I heard the conversation a little bit between you and Gardner before we started the show, is that one of the things that people always have this idea, just this is a quick little digression, but I think it fits, is that working class people, poor people don't care. Don't care about the environment. Don't care about the streets.
That is bunkus.
Don't care about that they're not, Lester, people who care.
Yeah.
Are willing to fight for change.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
It's very true. Mm-hmm. And they get neglected and left behind. I mean, every time Dundalk gets passed over every time. It's part of Baltimore County. And we're always the last to get any type of improvements, last to have any repairs. And it's like, oh, there's people in Dundalk. We'll just, you know, we're supposed to have the National Historic Trail going through part of Dundalk. And suddenly they didn't have the money, but amazingly they had $4 million to put a new park in Towson at the same time.
Wow. Mm. Lester.
Yeah, I was talking about this in class yesterday. I teach a class in urban policy, and I was talking about how it's very hard, and we're talking about poverty. It's very, very hard to organize and mobilize, but that's largely because they have significant survival issues to deal with. But that doesn't mean that they're not capable, right? There are a whole set of forces that actually work to make sure that they don't do work, that they don't even believe they can make political change. So part of our task is to get people to realize the power they have in them, particularly people who live in places like Dundalk or Essex or people who live in poor neighborhoods in Baltimore. In fact, they're facing the same exact challenge in some ways.
You show people that there's someone who cares like us, and it's amazing how people start coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
If they have somebody who says, look, I believe in you, and I believe we can do it, and that's our catchphrase is together we can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And that can apply to any one of us here, any of the urbanite change makers.
Right.
Because if you don't have that basic philosophy, and as soon as people realize, hey, this person really does care, then the support starts to come.
And that's so unique about our program, because we came into an impoverished neighborhood in East Baltimore that was probably the most violent for the last 15, 20 years, McElderry Park. And the outreach team and the Safe Street Mission was to reduce shootings and homicides. So how do we do that? So we had to use one of the things that you were saying. We blasted the neighborhood with posters and signs and bumper stickers that said, stop shooting, let's start living. So when we started pumping this philosophy in the neighborhood and start bringing community events that was free to the neighborhood, because what we have in some of them neighborhoods in Baltimore City, most people ain't going to go out to look for other resources. Mm-hmm. So we brought resources to the neighborhood, health, job fairs, and things of that nature, and started what it does, it started empowering people, and it starts them to believe again. It starts them to dream again. You know, one of the things that you're saying, when an area is affected with trash, it brings on depression. You know, in Baltimore City, an area is affected by poverty, it brings on frustration. And them frustrations have people make bad decisions. You know what I mean? So, and bringing that thinking for change into the neighborhood, it brings back the hope. It brings back dreams for people. And it starts empowering them in a small way. And I watched this community transform from one of the roughest to one of the mildest at the moment now.
Mildest.
Yeah, it's mild. You know, and I say that with a smile.
No. Go ahead, Lester.
Yeah, and if you think about it, and those are the type of changes that some people would make the claim you're not going to see, that violence is intractable, right? That there's no way that you can actually have substantive change in poor black neighborhoods or in poor white neighborhoods. But what these programs show is that you actually can make the change, not sustain it and make it durable. You have to bring political forces to bear. It's not just about individual guys doing stuff.
Yes.
But you can make those changes.
Yes, John Hawkins actually did our evaluation and our study, and it's proven that this model, this program, this mission, this campaign that we're on actually works. It could be set up in any area of Baltimore City, any area of the country, and get the right people to implement this program. I think we should invest more into programs like this that's going to have this positive impact in some cases might be not be as fast as some people want, but in the long run, the impact is going to be there because it's a proven model that works.
So, and what you just said, I think it's important to explore. And folks, I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. This is one of our Urbanite discussions. Three people in the Urbanite, a couple others, were named change makers in our community for the work they're doing in our community. Lester Spence is back with us, assistant professor of political science at Hopkins, but an author of the book Stare in the Darkness, the Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics, who created the Mixtape Project, which we've talked about on the air before and we'll do more today, which is using the power of hip-hop for political change in this community, organizing among young people. Gardner Carter, who is director of Safe Streets here in Baltimore, and he is a man who spent almost 20 years in prison for serious crimes, but in prison became a man who actually fought to end the violence, counseled young people in prison, and came out to become a leader in stopping the violence in the East Baltimore community by doing incredible interventions at the risk of his own life many times. And John Long, founder and president of Clean Bread and Cheese Creek, grew up in Dundalk in a steelworking family, moved back to his grandfather's house, found the creek behind the house, the Bread and Cheese Creek, so named because of the soldiers in 1812 who ate there and threw their bread and cheese in the water and ate their lunch there during the war. And so it was in such degradation environmentally, he organized community to kind of clean it up and fights for environmental change there in the east side of Baltimore County and elsewhere. 410-319-8888, what do you think it means to be a change maker? Are you a change maker? Define yourself as one. How does that work in your school, in your neighborhood, in your place of work? In the society in general, among your family, among your friends, 410-319-8888, in questions for our three guests here. And just wax a little bit more, Lester, about what you mean. Thinking about what the three of you do, whether it's the Mixtape Project, working hip-hop, in the middle of some of the most violent streets in Baltimore, trying to end the violence and bring people together to think of a different way to live, cleaning up the environment from the community level on, as John Long's doing in Dundalk, what you mean by you say it takes this more than just what individuals can jump in and do.
Okay. So people, like, so one of the things that we've had, and it's not just a Republican thing, the Democrats have been doing this too over the last 30 plus years. They've been talking about volunteerism, right? They've been emphasizing that they've been replacing government services with, like, people, like, volunteering, like churches having, you know, having workshops or whatever to deal with issues of unemployment. And we know that doesn't quite get at it, right? That it doesn't scale and that it's not sustainable because it's not institutionalized. It's just individuals doing it. And they don't have the administrative capacity to administer to the needs of the numbers of people who are involved in it, right? So at some point in time, what we need is some type of large-scale interventions. But what's important, what I think brings all of these particular change makers together in this particular cohort, is that each of these individuals not just had the creativity to realize that they could make the change they wanted to see in the world, not just that they can't, not only did they come up with a program to speak to that need, that program is actually scalable. Right. So in the absence of the government that we would want, each of these programs you could literally take them and plop them in some other place and just tinker around the edges and they should work. I think that's the thing that's incredibly important.
If we were told that when we started asking the community, the local government, for help to clean up, we were told there's no money. We can't do anything. Now, with no money, because we don't have any type of financing whatsoever, everybody in our organization is volunteers from the top on down. We have been able to remove over 51 tons of trash and debris.
Wow.
But
wow.
Nothing with volunteers and donations from private individuals and small local companies. That's it. So anybody can do that. It's like my grandfather said, you know, when you have somebody, it's very easy to write off somebody who is poor or who is uneducated, and it's easier to write them off than it is to take them under your wing. But if you take somebody like that under your wing, they're like a pile of wood. And once you ignite that wood, the fire burns much more brighter.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and I think sometimes that that's what, for lack of better words, the old school establishment, the ones who are telling us they can't help us,
wants,
is because when you light that fire, you don't know where that's going to spread or where it's going to take you. And I think that's a lot of times it's easier just to keep somebody under your foot.
Yeah.
You know, my grandfather had an eighth grade education.
Yeah.
He's the smartest man I ever knew. I can't even imagine what he would have been. Mm. He's actually, believe it or not, he's the man who invented beveling lug nuts on a car. But he was in the U.S. Navy at the time, so it's property of the Navy. Otherwise, he would have been a billionaire.
Wow. Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because what I have learned with lighting a fire, one of the things that in having our young men and women think something differently, it lights that fire in them to pursue something differently. And when they start pursuing something differently, that fire is lit and they roll. I got a few young men that come in every day, and they're looking to start their own home improvement company. And they've been getting their tax ID number, trying to get everything started. But it was just from sitting down, talking to them. They have to go through their trials and everything. But to somebody taking the time and lighting that fire in them, where they came to their own conclusion and say, look, man, this is what I'm going to do. Because they see so many abandoned buildings in their area, why can't they just buy one and fix it up? And then what that does, when their friends see them doing that, that's going to light that fire in them. Yeah. It's like, oh, if he could do that, if they can do that, why can't we do that? But when people just keep constantly telling you can do this and you don't have that vision, you don't see it. But when somebody help you dream or see that or light that fire, as you were saying, then, you know, we're going to need a lot of fire departments.
And we're cutting that budget a little too deep, I think, right now anyway. Number is 410-319-8888. We're talking with three people who have been named by Urbanite Magazine changemakers in our community. What does it mean to you to be a changemaker? How do we change things in really fundamental ways in this society of ours? And taking the example of these three men, but also how I'm going to ask some questions about what would happen if we united the energies of people who are change makers and what that would mean for the society of ours. 410-319-8888. And Andrea, you're on the air.
Hi,
Andrea,
everybody.
Welcome. How are you?
Hello.
I'm good. I have a neighbor on here. I live in Dundalk.
Hey.
And that's partly my call. The Dundalk guy gets to have me first. But if any of you want me to volunteer, I call in all the time. Everybody takes my number, and then I never hear from them. I'm like the most energetic, hardworking person you'll ever meet.
I can tell you right now, go to www.breadandcheesecreek.org, because we've expanded from just cleaning up Bread and Cheese Creek, and we are helping lots of little local organizations do their community cleanups too. And I hope to see we just keep spreading. We can always use volunteers. We'd love to have you. As a matter of fact, our first cleanup is this Saturday, and it's on North Point Road right between the Walmart and the Ark. And you know that area that's always trashed out. We're cleaning that up between 9 and 11 this weekend.
So, my kids are going to be so mad at me, but you know what? They can put their money, because we pass by there, and they're like, Mama, they need to clean that up. So I'm going to say, you know what?
Yeah, we're
going to
do that.
You said you need to be cleaned up. You're going to do it.
And we can sign off on community service hours for them, too.
Oh, wow. Yes.
All right. Andrew, it's always great to hear from you.
Their part.
All right. Take care, love. You're alive, that's for sure. 410-319-8888. Connie, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Good, Connie. How are you?
Going very well. I was just kind of listening to the station, and you guys were talking about what does it mean to be a change maker. And I think a big part of that is, you know, exactly what you were talking about, looking at the potential in a person, especially for me, because I work with children, and a lot of them are definitely, you know, they just don't have a lot of the same potential that, you know, we used to have due to, you know, not being educated and everything, the educational system not being as up to par as it used to be, and just really just noticing the potential that they have to be great, to be, you know, to understand who they are and what they can accomplish, and instilling in them, you know, just confidence. and, you know, and giving them the support that they need. I think a lot of people, they look at a situation and they see like, oh, we don't have funding. Oh, we don't have anybody to help us. But have you asked anybody? Have you, you know, literally put that work in and found out that actually people are donating money and they are like looking to volunteer somewhere? People, they want to help. They want to be a part of a team and really, you know, be a part of something great. And but you just have to give that opportunity to them, and you have to open the door and willing to put work in and instill something into these children, into these communities, so they can see that there's a world outside of where they live.
Yes,
it's true.
Connie, very thank you so much. Really very good thoughts. We're going to take a very brief break and come back. 410-319-8888 in our conversation with Changemakers, the urbanite selection of our Changemakers in our community. Three of them are with us right now. Lester Spence, Gardner Carter, and John Long. 410-319-8888. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're here with Urbanite's Changemakers, named in this month's Urbanite magazine, three people really active in our communities. Dr. Lester Spence is with us, author of the book Stare in the Darkness, The Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics, founder of the Mixtape Project here in Baltimore, trying to bring hip-hop into use of hip-hop in social and political change among our young people in this community, assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, Gardner Carter, who is director of Safe Streets here in Baltimore, who is this violence intervention program that is making great changes, especially in the neighborhood that they've been concentrating in over in East Baltimore. John Long, founder and president of Clean Bread and Cheese Creek in Dundalk, from a family of steelworkers. He went back home to take it over his grandfather's house and then led the battle to clean up the environmentally degraded creek behind his house and has expanded from there. 410-319-8888 is the number here. What does it mean to be a change agent? But what, how do you perceive that? And do you consider yourself one? Who are people in your life that are change makers? And the question, we talk about change makers. I mean, I keep thinking about. Is it? I don't want to put this without, because this is not against anybody who's doing the changes or being volunteers, right? But there comes a point, it seems to me, that all the change makers in the world from the bottom up has got to bubble into something to make real change in a much larger way, right? I mean, it's because you're confronting environmental disasters that from all the industry and everything else on the east side of Baltimore that destroy the rivers that used to be alive, you know? And there were a lot of working people living on the river, and now they want to kind of build condos there, move the working people out of the waterfront so they can give it to rich people, you know? And the stuff you're working on with hip-hop, which has a really bad name and seen as very negative, and your way of coming to that, but beyond, it's a billion-dollar industry, mostly been bought by suburban white kids, which we always forget about, but it's got this power. But how do you harness that power and really make change? What kind of change? And part of the reasons that the neighborhoods you're fighting in, Gardner, have to do with the deindustrialization of our society, where some of the people you're working with, their fathers or grandfathers or grandmothers worked in the steel mills, worked at Procter & Gamble, had jobs and families. There was always hard stuff on the street, but it was never like this because there was stability, right? So what we're talking about is serious, larger social change if we're going to have a long-lasting effect, probably longer than any of you can do with the beautiful work you do, which in some ways can be seen as patchwork, not to belittle it at all. Lester?
Yeah, I think so. In the case of the Mixtape Project, I knew, and for those of you who aren't aware, the Baltimore Mixtape Project, a group of us is a project by a group of people: me, Devrick Murray, Lawrence Grand Prix, Chris Barron, Zeke Cohen, and then Jared Ball, who's a Morgan guy. To kind of incentivize the production of politically progressive hip hop that deals with a very specific political issue, the school to prison pipeline, right? Now, in our case, we knew that there was already a pre-existing political movement to deal with that issue, right? So what we wanted to do is we purposely
use the school-to-prison pipeline to get people to produce stuff that we can then directly shunt into a pre-existing political movement. So one question is how do we get people – first, how do we get people to act, right? And we've talked about that. And then – but the second thing is how do we get people to see themselves as political actors or connected to a political movement? And that requires another step, right? So the first step in John's case is like, wow, we can clean this stuff up ourselves, right? Then the second step is, wow, we're volunteers, but we've got our own jobs. We pay taxes mm-hmm. every day. Mm-hmm. Some of our taxes should go to this, right? So it's about how do you make that leap? You know, we pay our taxes that goes into better police services mm-hmm. or that should go into community centers instead of privatizing them. That's the next step that's essential. So in some cases, people are making that change, but that change takes a lot of time because we have to undo 30 years of brainwashing where even people who have the right politics, right? It's like some of the Occupy folks, for example, don't believe in government, don't believe government should be involved, that we can do it ourselves, but we cannot. So it's part of a larger struggle.
Thoughts on what Lester said, gentlemen?
I think you hit it right on the nail.
Yeah, I would agree. It's a tough thing. It's there's a balancing act between too much government and not enough government. Mm-hmm. But it seems like there's too much government right now on the stuff there doesn't need to be, mm-hmm. and there's not enough government mm-hmm. on the stuff that
should be.
It should be. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, like I was saying, you know, discussion we had before. You know, the government spends $9 billion a year cleaning up illegally dumped trash and debris. Now, if they'd spent the time investing in educating in individuals and actually fining these people who were responsible for it, yeah. that $9 billion would be going back into the budget.
Mm-hmm. Talk about that tax thing, that little tax thing you mentioned in the break.
Yeah, but right, PG County passed the bag bill. It's a 5-cent tax for each plastic bag, trying to get people to use the reusable bags instead of the plastic ones. Now, that just started in January. Since January, they have made $150,000 by selling 5-cent bags that are – all of it is going back into fixing the environment. Now, think about that. I mean, that's just – people – it's a pittance. They don't even think about it. But it's changing behaviors. It's limiting the amount of waste going in it. And I could go on forever about the damage a single plastic bag can cause to our environment. You could have a whole show on just that alone. But – mm-hmm. little things add up, and people don't even think about it. Yeah. It's like all of us, you know, like you said, this is what we're doing is patchwork. It is. But I like to think of it more. It's more like an ink spot because an ink spot spreads.
Oh, wow.
I like
patchwork
it.
Oh, wow. Just sits like there yeah. and fixes a problem.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, that's great.
And it's like, you know, people yeah. who do something and they see a difference,
right.
it's contagious.
Right.
I'm sorry, you know, talk about an addiction. You know, I've got people who come to every single cleanup. And I've seen them, and they might not have 5 cents to rub together. And they're like, they might not have any control that they feel over their life. But when they look at that stream when it's done, it gives them the control.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go back to the phone since you want to jump in right here. 410-319-8888. Vargan, you're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to take my hat off to y'all because I really appreciate this conversation.
Thank you.
First of all, I go by Grio Vargas. I'm a former Morgan alumnus. I went to Morgan. And what I wanted to talk about was the hip-hop mixtape, Baltimore hip-hop mixtape project mm-hmm. that y'all were talking about.
Yeah, sure.
I just wanted to say that, you know, hip-hop is a billionaire, you know, excuse me, not billionaire, but it is a billion-dollar movement. You can make a lot of money off of this music. I know because I make the music and I'm a local artist. But it's not about the money all the time. It's about giving back sometimes. And one thing that I wanted to say was that the guy that was talking, he was basically talking about socially conscious hip hop, right? And what I wanted to say is that as an artist, you know, we gotta get support from radio when we out here giving out, you know, dropping gems and making this socially conscious hip hop. Because a lot of times you got rappers like myself and Gar Akbar and Ogun, you got so many guys out here that's dropping gems in their music, you know, along with the mainstream. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, brother. Go ahead.
Because I'm on my cell phone.
We got you.
You got guys that, you know, that's got major deals like Mos Def, Talib Kweli, et cetera, et cetera. but they're getting radio play. You know what I mean? The local artists out here that's socially conscious and dropping gems, radio not showing us love. You know what I mean? They showing us the snappers and the hoppers and the boppers. They showing them love. So it's like, if we're gonna have a movement, we're all gonna be supporting each other, and that needs to be the case. Is what I'm trying to say.
Agree, Vargan. This is good. But don't hang up. If you don't mind, I'm gonna have Cassandra, who's one of our producers, pick up and get your number so we can hook up with you after the show. I know Lester wants to, and so do I. So
yeah,
hold on.
Because I definitely want to contribute to this mixtape project. It sounds dope. It sounds like a great idea.
I'm gonna hook you all up. Don't hang up. And Cassandra's gonna pick up the phone and get your number and email whatever, so we can get you and Lester hooked up together. But Lester, you want to comment before we go to our next call?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of the movement, right? So in our case, we're trying to make two interventions. One is the school to prison pipeline issue, but the other thing is we need to have politically progressive radio. We need to have radio that meets the needs of the citizens, and part of that is that's not just Black radio. It's just radio in general. If you listen to it, they're not playing the work of local artists. They're not focusing on local news issues. They're not giving people the tools they use to navigate their environment. So it's like we wanted to make a cut there too, and we wanted to slowly but surely get kids and consumers to understand that they have the capacity to change it. Mm-hmm. Right? They have the capacity to change it, both by creating politically progressive hip-hop, and then by supporting politically progressive hip-hop.
We got a lot of calls. Let's go to the phones. A lot of people calling in. What you're saying, let me just throw out one quick thing what you were saying, Lester, I think is really important. The local stations aren't doing it. And, we can have you on and Grio Vargan, who just called in, other people, mm-hmm. and dealing with hip-hop and issues like this. But what has to happen in that realm is these local commercial stations where the kids are listening
to. Yes.
Because I don't have a lot of 15, 16, 18-year-old kids listening to my show.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Real talk, yeah.
But there are a few, but not that many.
Yeah.
So if you want to get to the kids who are in that hip-hop world for change, they got to open up their airwaves to local people so that these voices can be heard.
Yes. That's right.
Yes.
You know? That's right. And for Gardnell to be heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was going to say this because I know in East Baltimore, there's a host of young men and women that can rap, and some of them are real conscious, socially conscious in their rap. But that is one of the things that they have a problem getting heard. And one of the things that I know for sure, if it doesn't have no violent content, it doesn't sell. Violence sells. Consciousness doesn't. For major radios and things of that nature. So that's why it's not a lot of the rappers in Baltimore and across are socially conscious aren't being heard. But the thing of it is, not only do we need to just get the local radio stations, we need to get a movement of organizations putting these people out there at events.
Yes.
These people need to be at events.
Yes.
That are being held where they have in the Waka Flockers and all that. Yeah. We'll change that and put some of our local talent. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because the whole thing of it is these radio stations are indoctrinating our young people with all this mess, and they need to have socially conscious individuals indoctrinating it. That's how we're going to bring it. The change has to be holistic. You know what I'm saying?
That's great.
It's not just rap either.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
it's poetry.
Look back in the all music genres. I mean, take a look. Look at what they're playing now. Rock and roll, anything. Mm-hmm. It's like ballads. You don't hear love ballads anymore.
Oh, right.
I mean, that kind of went out in the 80s,
You're another type of ballad.
Exactly. Right. I mean, all you hear now is pretty much it's a lot of it is like, I want to be rich. I want to get drunk. I want to sleep with as many people as I can. And it's like, that's what it is in just about every music genre. I mean, look across it. Country, everything. And that's all they're talking about. It's like nobody's talking about what they're going to do or how much they love, their significant other. It's just, it's sad.
And we have a week that's coming up, the 19th through the 24th, that's going to be across the city. It's called Youth Violence Prevention Week, that a lot of schools and our organization, Safe Streets and Cherry Hill, Safe Streets and East Baltimore, and the Baltimore Health Department is about. So some of them young men and women that have that positive rap or positive poetry, spoken word, need to get in touch with the health department and see how we can get you out there to some of these things.
That's next week then.
Yeah, it starts Monday and it's all the way through Sunday. And you can get a calendar of the events that's taking place, and maybe you can go to one of the rec centers that's having the event or whatever, and you can put on a positive show.
Yeah. You know. Let me jump in and get the callers back. And this is really good. And there was something y'all should hook up with, too. 410-319-8888. Carrie, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Geoff.
Hi, Carrie.
How you doing?
Hi. This is my third time on the show. I'm getting excited. I really am. I want to tell you two things. First of all, there's a book, and when one of the guests talked about the ink spot, I thought about this book because I'm reading it now. It's called Active Hope. I can't tell you the whole thing because I'm reading it now, but it will let you. It will help you see how powerful that image really is. It really is about seeing ourselves and what we do differently.
Everything, every self-help book in the world, or even a psychologist tells you, you got to visualize what you want or the change before it can happen. I mean, if you could see it, you can bring it to a reality. If you can't see, oh, I don't think that's ever going to happen. And it's like, what, you know, what's to say is whether you say you can't or whether you say you can, you're right.
And this book is, I don't even want to call it self-help because that might turn off some people, especially if you survived the 80s like I did.
But, child of the 80s here.
But I just want to tell you, you're doing the right thing. You're thinking the right way.
Thank you, Carrie. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Let's go to James in Middle River. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going this evening?
Good, James. Welcome.
I think that there's an issue with trying to prescribe socially conscious messages and say, well, it needs to get out to the masses. I think at its heart, it's grassroots. Were it something that appealed to the masses, it would be there because it would be profitable and no one would hesitate to put it out there. I mean, I think for any industry, whether it be sports, whether it's music, whether, you know, business, anything that is socially conscious or for the people is going to be grassroots by nature. I mean, Muhammad Ali was socially conscious and he was popular for his time. How many socially conscious athletes do we have now? So I think that there's something to be celebrated about being able to reach a small group of people and through that small group build up a legacy, whether it takes months or years, and hopefully that you create a tidal wave that changes. But I don't think the nature of consciousness is one that says overwhelmingly we will reach everyone at one time. I don't think there's been any instance where you could find outside of civil rights that it was trendy for that to do so.
And that's not true for civil rights.
What did you say, Lester?
No, he's absolutely right, but it's not even true for civil rights. Nothing happens. It's not immediate like that. You're absolutely right. It takes time, and I mentioned that earlier. It's like a lot of the change we want to see, we probably won't. You know, we're relatively young, but a lot of the change we really want to see, we probably won't see.
Right.
And I think the other question is, why do we, and I'll hang up after this, why are we so eager to ask of our rappers and our poets and our hip-hop artists, even socially conscious voice, you don't ask that for film, you don't ask that for drama on stage, you don't ask it for so many art forms. Granted, there are some that have more socially conscious themes in them than rap does, but why are we asking people that are coming up in an art form that was street born and street bred to now switch places and be philosophical and educational?
Right.
I'll
go up with this. Lester wants to respond to what you're saying. Go ahead, Lester.
So quickly, I understand exactly the question. It's a good one. I just say I'm not asking that question. So I'm not actually going to MCs and telling them to make stuff. What I'm doing is I'm incentivizing kids and people who are already making stuff, who are already making beats, just to turn that into another direction. I'm not going to somebody like Lil Wayne and saying, listen, make this song for me. What I'm suggesting is that there's already people who want to deal with this issue in these communities, whether it's Baltimore, Detroit, East St. Louis, Essex, or Dundalk. Mm-hmm. It's about just giving them the tools to say what they want to say. And some of that stuff is political.
James, good to hear from you. Really good. This was a good conversation. 410-319-8888. I appreciate you calling and being part of the show. Jerry, you're on the air. Okay, can you pull Jerry? Yep. Jerry, on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hey, Jerry, you're on the air.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Andre from West Baltimore.
Okay, it says Jerry on my screen.
Oh, no problem.
Go ahead.
First of all, I'd like to commend your guests. I think this is a long time in coming. But I'd really like to just say one thing. I do think that socially conscious hip hop and rap can sell. And I don't know how old the guests are, but I remember in the early to mid '90s, that was pretty much dominated rap and hip hop, socially conscious rap. I just think that what happened was that it became market. It seemed more feasible to market this not necessarily just hip hop, but this negative gangster. I want to sell drugs. I want to be a pimp, et cetera. Type hip hop and rap. And the issue that I have, especially being an African American that's been around for a while and seen hip hop go from Run-DMC to N.W.A. to Socially Conscious to now Lil Wayne and Rihanna. The issue that I have is that as African American, I have a problem with our so-called African American leadership not putting these artists and these radio stations on blast, that is calling them out. Because as far as I'm concerned, these radio stations and many of these hip hop artists that are singing as negative, destructive rap are sellouts. And I give you an example, and I'll leave you with this. I remember after the end of the Million Man March, I remember, I'm gonna put it on blast. I remember Kathy Hughes, the president of Radio One, getting on all the radio stations, stating that after the Million Man March, they would no longer play gangster rap or play anything that degrades women or encourages violence. That lasted for a good year. Now when you turn to these same radio stations, that's all you hear. I can't even, if I have my daughter in the car, I can't even listen to the radio for more than 2 minutes. So, again, I like to give credit to credit due and thank your guests and tell them to keep up the good work.
Thank you so much for joining us today. So I'm wondering, as we look at this and hear what people are saying and what you all are working on, how do you think this notion of, as the urbanite put it, the professor, the peacemaker, and the restorer, as they call the three of you, Lester, Gardnell, and John, respectively, what would go from here? I mean, for the three of you, what is the cross-pollination beyond just the fact that you all have been named changemakers by the Urbanite, which I think is very cool, and you all deserve it. But what goes beyond that? What connects this?
I think that, there's a famous quote by Margaret Mead, which I absolutely live by. It's never underestimate the power of a few committed people to change the world. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has. And I think that all of us here have a passion today, and it's one of those things. Once again, it's like the ink blot. Once it spreads to a certain size, it's going to start to connect with the other ink blots. And eventually, kindness is the only language that the deaf can hear and the blind can see. And that applies to everything that we're doing as individuals. We're trying to help our communities. And it's like we're going to overlap eventually. As we spread, it's just going to happen because we're going to continue to grow, at least as far as I'm sure the passion I see in these other gentlemen here today, this is not a passing fancy for any one of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually, so if you just take my idea and boil it down, it's about creating art that speaks to politics. So in as much as one of John's challenges is, so the connection between me and Gardnell is straightforward, right? We're dealing with the exact same issue using different techniques. Mm-hmm. But the connection between me and John and John and Gardnell is actually there too. So real quickly, the kids in Essex and Dundalk need to be informed about the politics of the environment, of the space they live in, and that all the trash and stuff comes there for a reason, and the reason it's not picked up is due to politics, right?
Exactly.
So you can use the same type of model, not necessarily hip-hop necessarily, but you can use the same type of model to get people aware of it in this case. And then the relationship between Gardnell and John is really simple in that I'm willing to bet if you went to Gardnell's neighborhood, you'd see a different type of trash, but it's environmentally unsound also. So it's like that's the connection.
Exactly.
Us three together, I think, are the work we can do easily blends over into the other field.
We're all removing trash. Always a physical form.
Yeah, that's I like that.
Gardner, you want to jump in on that?
Well,
I think even though we don't have the other change makers here, all of it is a healthy living, a healthy thinking, a holistic way. And I think even though we have just us three here, with the seven as a combined force and an effort, I think that's a force to be reckoned with, because it's coming from a holistic approach. Our initiative is health. You know, it's under the health department. You know what I mean? So we look at what's taking place, violence that's taking place in our neighborhoods, as a health epidemic. You know, and it is the trash. It is the economics. It is the politics. You know, it's the whole gamut of things. Yeah. You know, and we was working on one issue at a time, but now with all of us here, we working on the whole issue. You know, we're bringing the healthy living to the neighborhood, the healthy eating, the healthy mentality. We're not throwing anybody away to the wayside.
Oh, wow.
And there is this connection. I mean, as you all were talking, is the environment is a connection that affects everybody.
Yes.
Yeah. And the more it surges from the bottom, from working people and communities of color, the more it really is going to take on the power it needs to have.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was thinking about when you were talking about hip-hop, I think about Dundalk, and this really struck me, because Dundalk's a changing community, right?
Yeah.
So whether you're a white working class kid living in Dundalk, or whether you're an Asian kid living in Dundalk, or whether you're a Latino kid living in Dundalk, and that's who's making up Dundalk now. It's white, Latino, and Asian for the most part. Some African American, mostly that they all listen to hip-hop.
Yep.
All the young
people.
Very
true.
They all.
Very true.
Yeah.
Into hip-hop, right?
Yeah. And it's... We're dealing with people. I mean, whether you want to say we're dealing with trash, whether we're dealing with hip-hop, whether we're dealing with healthy food, we're dealing essentially with people. We're trying to make things healthier for people, lives better for people, because people aren't trash. People are like a spring.
Yes.
And the more you compact them down, the more force they're going to have to spring up.
Yes.
And that's what's happening. And we want to spring them up in a positive way.
I just love it. It's a man, you're full of more quotes than any man I've ever had on my show.
Yeah, John is dope.
Yes.
I love it. It's good. This is good. So we've been talking this hour with three of the change makers named by Urbanite Magazine, one of our Urbanite Radio discussions. We had in the studio with us the Restorer, John Long, founder and president of Clean Bread in Cheese Creek, fighting to create environmental change in Dundalk, his town, on the east side of Baltimore County, Gardner Carter, director of Safe Streets in Baltimore, the Peacemaker, as they named him in the Urbanite, and he is that for sure. Dr. Lester Spence, the professor, who is author of Stare in the Darkness, Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics, assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, and founder of the Mixtape Project. You want to say what, Lester?
Yeah, real quick. When you get selected for this, there are a number of people that could have been selected. My case, there, you know, I wanted to give a shout-out to the Black Male Identity Project. I wanted to give a shout-out to April Garrett at Civic Frame. I wanted to give a shout-out to my other folk in the Baltimore Mixtape Project, because there's a group of us. And I would give a shout-out to the Occupy folk, the folk associated with Red Emmas and the other Occupy folk.
All right. It's great to have all three of you on today. And look forward to more conversations like this and to following up individually and stuff on the work that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Stay connected.
I've been very flattered to be here.
Good. Stay connected, y'all. This is good. So we're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by two of our city council representatives to talk about everything from the Grand Prix to bottle taxes to what is happening to the violence in our community, the little girl who was murdered, and what we're doing beyond just incarcerating two little boys for it, and what the police have done, and more. So stay with us. We'll be right back.